My guest at this time is Ed Whalen. He's the president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington. He directs the center's program on the Constitution, the courts, and the culture. Mr. Whalen is also a former clerk for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. He served as general counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's a former official in the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. We want to get his reaction to Tuesday's oral arguments before the Supreme Court over whether states have the right to define marriage as they see fit or whether they must accept same-sex marriage. Justices are also considering whether states must recognize same-sex marriages performed in states where it is legal. That question is only relevant if the court upholds the right of states to define marriage. And Ed, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Well, the big case that was seen and heard by the court today is out of the Sixth Circuit. That's Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. That's the only appeals court to uphold traditional marriage laws. The early media read, at least from the oral arguments today, seems to be that traditional marriage supporters may have more reason for hope than they first thought on the first question, since both Justices Kennedy and Roberts sounded a bit reluctant to redefine the institution of marriage, but perhaps more open to making sure that all states have to recognize any legal marriage performed in another state. What was your sense of it?
Well, I think it would be a folly to read too much into oral argument. I come out of oral argument with the same pessimistic view with which I went in. When you look at Justice Kennedy's record, what he's written, what he's done, especially over the last 20 years, I think he is a very, very likely vote to invent a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. I think he may have had an interest in appearing open-minded, to appear as though he hadn't made up his mind, but I'm very skeptical.
Are there any particular moments that exposed where you think he likely is? I know there was one point where the former Solicitor General from Michigan, who was arguing the traditional marriage side, John Birch, said that the huge growth in out-of-wedlock children is a suggestion that we got to keep and strengthen marriage the way it is. And Kennedy seemed to think that was an argument for same-sex marriages, since gay people adopt a lot of kids. So was that kind of a revealing moment?
Well, again, I'm simply not going to assign much weight to any particular passage in the oral argument. Anyone who's attended these oral arguments knows that it's a rather chaotic affair. Justice Kennedy's questions are sometimes coherent, sometimes not. Same for the other justices. So I would assign far greater weight to what Justice Kennedy did 2 years ago in Windsor, far greater weight to the Supreme Court's denial of review last October from the four courts of appeals that had struck down state marriage laws, far greater weight to the Supreme Court's incomprehensible, in my judgment, refusal to stay the district court ruling in Alabama. So I think those are strong signs, and particular questions or comments that oral argument, while the media likes to focus attention on them, really don't mean much of anything. So I'm not going to give them much weight.
Ed, what do you think is the stronger legal argument, that marriage is an institution that's been around essentially since the dawn of time, and it would be foolhardy to tinker with and redefine that institution? Or to use the states' rights arguments that, regardless of what you think about the definition of marriage, it ought to be up to the states to determine that law for themselves?
Well, I think it's essential to distinguish the constitutional question from the policy question. The constitutional question is, does the Constitution require that states redefine marriage to allow same-sex couples to marry, or does it leave this as a question that states can sort out as they see fit? On that matter, I think that the Constitution clearly leaves the matter to democratic processes. But if you're a living constitutionalist like Justice Kennedy, who believes that the Constitution means whatever you want it to mean, then you can make things up as you go along, and nothing, no argument I'm going to make is going to have much of an impact. On the policy question, again, I respect those who think that marriage ought to be redefined to include same-sex couples. I disagree, but there's plenty of room to talk about what redefinition of marriage would do to the institution, how to take care of competing concerns about religious liberty. The great thing about having this issue handled through democratic processes is the two sides try to persuade each other rather than one side screaming bigot. And there's also room for compromise and accommodation and for change over time. So I think the Constitution leaves this matter, like most hotly contested matters, to democratic processes, and that's how it should be worked out. But I fear that is not what five justices on the Supreme Court are going to say.
And the prime argument, of course, from those advocating for the legalization nationwide of same-sex marriage is that the 14th Amendment is on their side and the Equal Protection Clause. How do you respond to their general argument?
I think it's far-fetched to read the 14th Amendment to mean that the very sort of laws that existed everywhere at the time the 14th Amendment was adopted, that it existed everywhere throughout Western civilization, that it existed everywhere up till the day before yesterday, or at least until 2003, are now to be deemed unconstitutional, even though no one, as a historical matter, thought that the 14th Amendment had anything to do with altering the male-female definition of marriage.
Ed, you seem to think that the odds are in favor of those advocating same-sex marriage. It's been said by many that the court, not only in this case, but in previous cases, has been reluctant to put out a ruling that's reminiscent of Roe v. Wade that obviously doesn't solve the debate and perhaps even further polarizes the nation. Do you get the sense that that is a priority for this court or not so much?
No, I think you have in Justice Kennedy and other justices a real extreme view of judicial power. And just as Justice Kennedy said in the Planned Parenthood v. Casey case that ratified Roe 2 decades ago, he expects that the people will acquiesce in whatever the court does. So I put nothing beyond what Justice Kennedy and other members of this court might do on this issue. And, you know, I would be very, very surprised if the court were to get this one right.
Following up on the Roe v. Wade question, do you think that if the court does, in fact, rule the way you suspect it'll rule come June, that this will provide resolution to this debate or only be one step in an ongoing and very fierce debate?
Well, I think that, you know, what we've seen in this country in recent decades is a collapse of marriage as an institution, a collapse that heterosexuals are largely responsible for. This is I think it's this collapse that makes even conceivable this whole possible redefinition of marriage. It's this collapse that has out-of-wedlock births at higher than 40%. We're transmitting the pathologies of out-of-wedlock births from generation to generation in a way that I think will make it very difficult to sustain the sort of civilization we're used to having. So I worry very much about what that means down the road. So, you know, I hope that we will at some point awaken to the need to revive a thriving marriage culture. I don't see how we can do that if five justices on the Supreme Court believe that the Constitution renders, you know, irrational any connection between marriage and procreation. So if marriage is redefined away from its core mission, it's going to perform that mission less well, and the consequences will be severe.
Ed, we'll be watching. Thanks very much for your analysis. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ed Whalen is president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington, where he directs the center's program on the Constitution, the courts, and the culture. He's a former clerk for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, former general counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and a former official in the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.